So, on the Apetricon Day, so today Nick is going to speak about diversity when not playing life on easy.
Okay, last session. Last few people. All right. So, has anyone come across this term of playing life on easy? No? The kind of idea of this is that being a white guy doesn't mean life is easy. It can be hard. There are lots of problems that you face. But that doesn't mean that it can't be worse for other people. So if you think of a computer game where you get to the first level and you're playing through and you keep dying, it's just too many bad guys. And you can't win. You could have been playing it on a harder setting and you would have still failed just a bit quicker. Equally, you could play that first level and you're like, oh, that was really easy. You could have whacked it up to hard and you still might have been able to play through without any problems. So it's not that playing life on easy means that life is easy, it just means it's a little bit easier. But we can maybe learn a little bit about how to be better people, do better in our jobs, do better in our work environments by turning the difficulty up a little bit for ourselves and seeing how we do. And then maybe get a little bit of an idea of what life's like for people who don't have that choice to dial the difficulty setting back. Can we get the door closed, do you think? As they're doing their awesome thing of talk start, push the trolley cart of all the glasses around. Apparently, if you try asking them to not do that, they just look at you and then carry on. We did ask. Right, so what I'm going to try and cover today is some of the lessons I've learned from cases where I have accidentally turned the difficulty setting up, things that I've done to help the Apache projects I'm involved in work better, things I've done that have ended up making my team work better or make me work better in my team, and some of the things that I've cocked up along the way that hopefully you can try not to repeat, or at least repeat as badly. I'm aiming for this to be a nice, friendly introductory session. You shouldn't really have to know anything about diversity. You certainly don't have to be diverse, which is good because that's kind of the audience that we've got. So I was a little bit worried because you go to some conferences and you do a diversity talk and you're like, okay, I've just found where all seven of the women at the conference are because they're now in my diversity talk. I'm talking to the wrong audience. I'm trying to give this session to people like me who need to know a bit more. Okay, so time zones. Who here has worked with teams with projects across time zones? Should be all of us. Who here has done that and come across people in your team, or worse, your boss, who doesn't really understand about time zones? Ever kind of got permission to work from a conference and then had your boss phone up at the usual time and you're like, I was going to bed, or worse, I'm in bed and it's not yet early enough. There's not a lot we can do about time zones. Cory Doctorow did write an interesting book called Eastern Standard Tribe about the idea that people might pledge an allegiance to a time zone other than their own and try and bring down the West Coast by being in the West Coast but living in East Coast time and that kind of thing. It was a slightly odd book, but you know, it's Cory Doctorow. Some great ideas, not necessarily all hold together. But what we can try and do is think what it's like for people in different time zones to the one we're in and try and make sure that we're working in a way that takes account of that. So on your project, when we say you should wait at least 72 hours for making decisions, you should try and do your decisions in asynchronous methods like the mailing list rather than face-to-face. You're helping out people who are in different time zones. when you get the email from someone saying something's really urgent in the middle of the night, it's not their fault. They didn't, you know, choose that. When you're sending that email saying, oh my God, this is really urgent, we've got to fix it, and everyone ignores you for 12 hours, just kind of think a little bit about people in different time zones and the challenges they face, and try and remember that that little bit of discomfort is a guide to what else can be going on for people. Another thing to remember, working weeks. Some people are going to work Monday to Friday. Some people are going to work Sunday to Thursday. Some people are going to be working during the week. Some people are going to be doing stuff on Apache projects on their weekends. And that's going to be different. You know, you can have the day job people, the volunteer people. Try and remember that just because you're sat at your computer right now working on a patch, working on a bug that you need some help with, that you need some collaboration on, you need some clarification on, not everyone else is going to be in exactly the same situation as you. Try and have a little bit of empathy for everyone else. You know, I think it's sometimes worse if there's a few of you in the same office and you're working on a project and you're like, oh yeah, let's just get this bug finished. It's Friday afternoon, want to get this done before the end of the week. And then you're like, oh God, I need some help from someone over there. This bug's not quite clear enough. They've not attached that file we need for the test case. Oh God, they're useless. You've got to kind of remember that maybe you're in California and they're in Israel. So it's not like there's an 8-hour time difference. It's effectively a 36-hour time difference because, you know, just try and think about the fact that there are going to be different people working different times. Try and bake that into your plan so that it's not going to be critical. Okay. Languages. Who here has tried working in their second language? I know you have. It's quite weird the first time you do it. I mean, I know that I used to be a bit short with people on the mailing list who'd write emails that didn't quite make sense. And I'd be like, oh, come on, you know, if you go into the trouble to write an email, you know, why do a half-assed job of it? Come on, you're wasting everyone's time here. And then the first time I was trying to write an email to the co-working space in France that I was using that week, and I'm like, oh God, is it that? Do I conjugate it like that? Does it need to be past tense? I'm like, it took me 6 times as long to write as it would have done in English, and it was bad. I made mistakes at the grammar, this kind of thing. But it took me so much longer. I tried so hard, and I still failed. If you've got people who are working in their third language, their fourth language, their fifth language, you know, some of my team in India, that English is their fourth language. And it's just incredible. You kind of go, oh, you made this mistake. Come on, my niece wouldn't make that mistake. Oh, hang on a minute, no, my niece actually only speaks one language, and this is your fourth, this is your fifth. Just try and be a bit sympathetic to people. Try and be aware of the effort that people are going to be putting in when they're communicating with you. Be glad that they've made the effort to actually communicate with you in your language at all, rather than saying, huh, your project isn't in Kannada. Fine, sod it, I won't use it. You know, they've chosen to engage with you, chosen to try and help you, and just be a little bit more friendly and accommodating. Being the odd one out. I mean, here in this room, we're all kind of guys, age 20 to 40. We're all kind of similar when we walk out there, or would have done, except that now everyone's gone home. We're all kind of similar, and so it's quite comfortable. When you're the only one like you in a room, it can be a little bit different, and you can kind of feel a little bit timid just because you're looking around and everyone else is different to you. So, one example I have is a few years ago, first job after uni, I was working for a little web agency, did a lot of work with not-for-profits. And being a web agency, mostly people recently out of uni, it was mostly white English guys. And we got a job working for a reasonable-sized charity. And they needed their website doing We had a few meetings with them, went really well. Then we went down into London and went to their office. Walk in the office, and someone goes, "Oh, are you here for IT?" And you're like, "How did you know?" And it's like, "Oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, there's three guys in the building. There's me, my colleague, and the scared-looking guy from IT. The rest of the office was women. When you wanted to go to the loo, you had to go to reception and to the one unisex toilet by reception because all of the other toilets in the whole building were women. Because they were like, well, you know, almost everyone else women. And oh, Jim from IT, yeah, he can just walk. Come on, there's only one of him. There's 50 of us. And you're just kind of in this environment going, I'm completely different to everyone else. They're being really nice to me, but it's just so obvious that I'm not like the rest of them. And you just kind of felt a little bit timid, and then you went into the IT office and sat down and closed the door, and like, okay, feels a little bit better now. Feel a bit back in my comfort zone. But then you sort of, and you're thinking about other people in your project, other people in your company, and you're like, what's it going to be like for them to be that one odd one out all the time? When I was spending a bit of time living in France, I was at this co-working space, and it was 2/3 men, 1/3 women, but I was the only English person there. You know, and they all looked at me a little bit oddly because I didn't dress quite the same as them. Because, you know, they're all suave and French and I'm there in English, you know, didn't have quite the same hairstyle. You know, it's all these things and you just kind of feel a little bit odd. You're not quite yourself quite as quickly. Okay. Mistakes no one mentioned. Have you ever been in a group for a while and then someone kind of sneaks up to you and says, no one else is doing that? And you realize that you've been making this mistake with this group for weeks and they've all been kind of quietly snickering every time you do it and they've not told you? And what that does to your confidence when you realize. Yeah, and it can be really hard and it can be really stupid things that you're doing, but then you're really self-aware afterwards. So in English, you'd say, I'm Nick. In French, you don't say, je suis Nick. You say, je m'appelle Nick. I'm called Nick. For a while, I'd kind of forgot. That's the first thing you learn. When you go to school French class, it's like, bonjour, je m'appelle Nick. 15 years later, I'm there. Yeah, I'm a little bit tense because I'm like this only English guy in this group of French people. And I'm like, ah, bonjour, je suis Nick. And no one said anything for weeks, but you could tell they were just looking at you a little bit odd. You're like, what is it? Yeah, I know I'm the English guy. I know I don't look quite the same as you. And yeah, and it's just because I'm making this really elementary, basic French mistake. But no one was actually like, that's not what it is. They just kind of looked at me a bit funny. And then afterwards, I'm like, oh my God, what other mistakes am I making? Do I really want to speak up? Do I want to send another mail to the main list? Because I'm the English guy that keeps making a mistake. It just gives your confidence a really big knock. So be aware that the other people who are in your group who aren't quite the same as you, another language, another culture. I've met Americans in Oxford who, they're like, oh yeah, it's raining out, I got my pants wet. And we're like, they're like, what? What's wrong with saying I got my pants wet? Like, and then you kind of take them aside and go, okay, so in American, these are pants. In English, it's the thing underneath them that's your pants. And they're like, oh my God, oh my God. And their confidence takes a knock. And it's kind of hard for them to get back into the conversation again. And so just kind of be aware that these things will happen and it's going to give other people, different people, pause. So, you've got the cultural ones, the linguistic ones. Another one that can make people feel really different is when people say, well, aren't all the group that you are in the representative like that? You know, you'd be sat at lunch with some colleagues and they'd be like, oh, come on, Dirk, surely all Dutch people are like that. And then you're like, oh, God, I'm now being the token man with the orange flag here. Yeah, well, with me, they're like, oh, come on, Nick, you know, all English people are like that. And you're like, well, no, they're not. But now I'm kind of feeling a bit worried that I'm this representative and everything that I do wrong or different is going to be seen by everyone as representing this whole group. So if you're the one woman on the project, and then everyone's saying, oh, but are all women like that? You think back to the XKCD, I don't know if anyone's seen it, the XKCD comic about maths. And it's like, Dirk, you've made a mistake. You're rubbish at maths. Jane, you've made a mistake. All women are rubbish at maths. Yeah, when you accidentally become what everyone is thinking of as this whole group, and then you kind of go, oh God, I can't speak up, I can't make a mistake. If I submit that patch and there's a mistake in it, then they're going to think all English guys are rubbish coding. Or poor imaginary Jane's like, oh, I've got to make sure that this patch is really, really good. I can't send it in yet, I'm going to have to wait till tomorrow because I've got to make sure it's perfect. Otherwise they're going to think women can't write big data code. And then it inhibits people's participation. It makes them more worried. And if you can try and be a bit more welcoming and not take people to represent whole groups, but just treat them as individuals, it's a bit easier for them to get on. And if they're getting on a bit better, then they're going to do better work. They're going to be happier, more productive, rather than a little bit scared. Another one that's similar is when you get held up as the representative of a whole group and then quizzed on your position. Sat there at lunch in France, and they're like, Nick, what did the English think of this? And I'm like, what do I know? I'm the weird English guy living in France at the moment. How can I possibly express the view of 50 million English people or 65 million people from the UK? Or are we even going to get into the whole debate about England versus the United Kingdom versus Great Britain? And you know, and you're like, oh God, what do I say? How do I respond to this? I've spoken with a few women who've said that they've kind of felt a little bit scared when someone's like, oh, you're a woman, what do we do about diversity? And they're like, oh, I can tell you what to fix about this specific project, but I can't educate all of you all at once. And it really makes you feel like you're the odd one out again. And then it's like, well, and then it goes back to being, aren't all so-and-so like that. It inhibits the conversation, makes you feel really different. Even if someone was trying to be nice, trying to include you in the conversation, like, hey, let's we've just been talking about French politics. Let's be nice to the English guy. Let's try and bring him in. But then somehow they've actually brought me into the conversation and made me feel even more alien than I did when I couldn't join him because I didn't know enough about French politics. I mean, they're trying to be nice, but they've ended up making me more scared and feel more different than if they just left me alone eating, cutting the cheese wrong, which apparently is a thing you can do if you're British and you're in France. Who knew? Another one. The way that you can sometimes behave depends on the group that you're in. Now, a few people have said to me that when I'm speaking French, I'm a different person. Definitely had a Spanish friend where I noticed that they look different when they're speaking Spanish. The way they move their arms, the way that their face looks, they just look kind of like a different person. If you see me here at ApacheCon, when I know quite a lot of people, I'm a lot more relaxed than when I'm at a conference where it's my first time there and I don't know anyone. You see me at a conference and I don't know anyone, I'm like, I don't know anyone, I'm just going to sit in the corner of my laptop, I'm a bit scared, a bit shy here. And then you see me here at ApacheCon, I'm like, hey Dirk, hey Greg, I know everyone, I'm cool, chilled. You know, it's a tech conference, but I'm a very different person depending on the group I'm with, the confidence you have. So if you've got a woman who's going to be there and is the only woman in the event, she's going to probably going to be a little bit quiet, a little bit more reserved than if she's with a whole load of her friends. She's feeling a bit more confident. And then you're going to be like, oh, why are all the women just being so antisocial and hiding at the back? Well, if you saw them with a few more people, they might have a bit more confidence. They might be kind of coming out and grouping. It's like you might say, well, why is the English guy always sat in the corner not coming over and chatting out coffee? And it's like, oh, because they're all going to take the piss out of my French again. And I'll just hide. A couple of other English people come in, yay, you'll be friendly again. Just be aware that people can behave differently in different circumstances, different social settings, different confidence things. Don't just assume that because they're one way at one specific time, in one specific environment, that's what they're always like and Or even worse, that's what all people like them are like. Okay, another one. It can be hard being the first person of a type in a specific group. When I went to this co-working space in France, you know, I was kind of the first English guy to have turned up there. It hadn't been open very long, it's quite new. They all thought it was a little bit odd. Been there a couple of months and a friend came over for the weekend, got in a bit early, came to the co-working space. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. They're all really friendly. They're not taking the piss out of my French. It's all really nice. It's like, yeah, but I've acclimatized them to this weird creature of English people. And now you've turned up and you find it really chilled, but that's different because there's a few more people around. It's different. So the web agency I worked at straight out of university, when I started, 10 people, one woman. The whole company for a while stayed around 15-20% women. And we did talk a little bit about diversity. We did try and think about ways to get a few more women in, especially when we were working mostly for charities and, you know, you'd go to see the office and you're like, okay, so you've got the one token man in IT and we brought four guys. Don't we look a bit odd? So we're going, well, how do we get more women to come join the company? And we kicked around some ideas, didn't really reach any conclusions. And then we kind of noticed that we were a 30-person company. We'd grown from 10 people to 30 people, and we had 14 women. And then we're kind of looking back and like, hang on a sec, the last three people we've hired are women. What's going on there? And we kind of were at lunch chatting in the pub, and we were asking one of the new hires, we're like, how do we do? What magic thing did we do that meant that we managed to hire you? And the woman was like, I won't work anywhere that's less than a third women. And we'd reach some magic number, and then a whole load of other people came out the woodwork and came and joined us, and we were pretty much parity. And there were these women who were like, I don't want to be the woman. I want to be a designer. I want to be a coder. I don't want to be the woman who codes. I want to be just seen for that. So I only go and work for companies that have decent diversity. So if you're looking at your project and saying, well, how do we get more people from the Indian subcontinent involved? How do we get more Chinese people involved? How do we get more women involved? Be aware that getting the first one and being nice to them and being supportive of them can actually be what's needed to then get the fifth one, the tenth one. And if you make that first person feel really odd and uncomfortable, bearing in mind that they're the one that was willing to be the only one, if you don't make it easy for them, they're not going to tell other people like them to join. You're not going to get that later cohort of people who don't want to be the odd one out. So take some time, be nice to those first few people, because that's what can unlock that big difference in diversity later. Okay, a little bit more on language. I can spend the whole day talking French. I can spend the whole day talking English, as I have done today. This is talk number three for me. But what I'll say is, if I spend the whole day in France, I get to about 6 p.m. and I'm exhausted. Really, really tired. And I start struggling to speak anymore. You know, and if you've got a whole day in an office speaking French, and then I try and go out for drinks with people, I'm just sort of sat in the corner wibbling, going, I'll have more beer. Oh, it's too much. I'm getting tired. And they're like, Nick, what's up? Why aren't you being lively anymore? And I'm like, no, I'll say, it's just thinking and working and being in a second language, in a third language, can be a lot more tiring than the first one, which means I can't necessarily get as much done in a day when I'm working in another language. Yeah, I can go to work in England, do a whole day of work, then go home, then maybe work on a couple of patches, send a few emails to the main list, all in English. That's fine. Put me spending a whole day in a French office, I'm not going to be able to contribute to the mailing list, even in English that evening. I'm just going to be too tired. So think about the fact that not everyone's going to have your luxury of being able to spend a whole day doing one thing in another language and then carrying on with it. And be nice to them when they're sending that email that you know has come at the end of a long day and maybe they've made a few mistakes. Maybe something wasn't quite so clear. Getting a word in. Some cultures, when you're having a group discussion, have very clear rules about when someone gets to speak. Some cultures, it's kind of everyone piles in and you've got people speaking over the top of each other and so on. If you're speaking or thinking in a second language, in a third language, you might be half a sentence behind everyone else. Yeah, you kind of got to wait for the end of the sentence because you can't guess what's going to come, which means that by the time you've thought up the response, which was just that little bit slower because it's your second language, the conversation's moved on. You'd be like, oh yeah, I can say a joke about that. Oh no, it's moved. Okay, and you're just not getting to jump in. If you're on a mailing list and you're watching it go past and you know, someone sends a mail and then someone replies and someone replies, someone sends a patch, someone disputes it and it's all happening really fast, then you're like, I can't, how do I jump in? Oh yeah, I can make a point about that. Oh no, someone else has already. Oh yeah, I've got an idea. Oh, you know, and then you might look at it again. What's up with Dirk? You know, he's on the mailing list. He's not contributed anything. Come on, Dirk, you know, get your patches in. And he's there going, oh, come on, it's all the Americans just sending the patch, email. It's really hard, you know. So be aware that for other people, it can be hard for them to, especially in other languages and things. Make sure you're making time for it. If you've got a team meeting and you've got people from other countries, don't just plow on through. Give them a chance to speak up. If you've got people coming from cultures that maybe are a bit more reticent, make sure you actually say, Dirk, you've been a bit quiet for a bit. Do you want to say something? If you've got any women in the room who often get socialized to be a bit quieter, maybe a bit less forthright, don't just say, oh, well, only two people spoke up and they agreed with me, so we're all good. Be aware that, you know, other people in the room quite possibly will have an opinion, will want to say and just didn't get a chance to say it. And if the conversation's moving very rapidly, if the meeting's moving very rapidly, they might still want to say something, but they might have missed it, and give them a chance to actually participate. Otherwise, you'll miss out on their insight. And you discover 6 months later that Dirk knew that this was going to fail when you didn't use US ASCII, but he didn't get a chance to say, and now your web application's just blown up because you hired Manuel and he's got an accent and name, and you know, you miss out on important stuff. All right, another issue. I find it quite hard to make a joke in French and have people understand it's a joke and not a mistake. Because I have a tendency to make mistakes in my French and say, je suis Nick rather than je m'appelle Nick. When I try and make a joke, sometimes they're like, no, you got it wrong. And I'm like, no, I deliberately swapped the word to be funny like you did. Yeah. And it can be a bit disappointing, you know, when people misunderstand your jokes and then again, it makes you a bit quieter. Because if I can't join in with the funny conversation where we're all taking the piss out of each other because when I say something, they think I've made a mistake rather than making a joke, then I'm not going to take part. And then I'm back to being the weird English guy in the corner again. And then poor imaginary Jane is back to being the one woman in the group who isn't fun, isn't one of the lads, doesn't take part in all the joshing. Just because it's a different culture, it's a different language, they don't feel confident making that joke. You know, I got to know a group quite well now before I'll try again making a joke in French because I've got burnt so many times by everyone going, well. No, just be aware that it's different for people and that you need to give them a bit more space and don't just write them off as being no fun. Apache, we're all about the mailing list, aren't we? Getting everything written down, getting everything preserved for posterity, except when we're at events. Different people are going to have different levels of competence between spoken and written. At Apache, that kind of means that if you can't write in English, you probably can't really join in. In your business, it might be different. You know, in your day job, you might spend a lot of time on the phone, having meetings, and then it's all about the spoken rather than the written. But be aware that people can often have very different levels of skill at the two. There's something about the way that the French education system teaches English, which means they don't actually speak that much. They spend a lot of time writing. And so there's quite a lot of people in France who have really high standards of written English. And their spoken English isn't quite so good, and their spoken English confidence is really bad. And if I want to have a chat with them, I need to give them a lot of encouragement to actually speak in English, because they'll be like, oh, no, I can speak English. No, non, ne parle pas en français. And you're like, no, you can speak English. I've seen you write an email to that open source list over there. And they're like, no, it's not good enough. And just be aware of people at different levels. If you're in a team meeting at work and you know that there's someone who's always sending really good emails and then doesn't speak up in the team meeting, maybe it's because they just don't have the confidence in spoken. Don't just write them off and say, oh, those Chinese guys, they're rubbish. They never speak up in the team meeting. Code's pretty good, but no, they're not a team player. They never speak up in the meeting. Just be aware that maybe they're written and they're spoken. Languages are going to be at different levels, or even just the confidence of them is going to be different. Try and accommodate, and then you'll get the best out of your team. You get the best out of your project rather than just saying, Okay. Another issue, it can be really daunting getting started, especially if you're playing life on a higher difficulty level and you've had all these issues that we've gone through before. So, okay, there's no point getting started, I'll be no good at it. It's one you hear quite a lot from people, especially people who've maybe had bad things happen to them. So, speaking. I'm here, this is my sixth talk of the conference, it's my third talk of the day. If you wind back maybe about 10 years, I didn't necessarily feel confident speaking up in a team meeting, let alone standing up in front of a room and rambling on about a topic outside my comfort area. It can be quite hard that first time, and it takes a lot of encouragement. I ended up first speaking at an event because it was something my company was running, and I was there helping doing the tech stuff. I was helping getting the sound desk working, helping getting the internet working in the venue. And I'd done the internet like 3 times, and someone was like, what are you guys doing? We hold events here, and the internet's always shit. Never works. You guys come in and do an event, and the internet stays up. And they're like, Nick, just go on stage. We've got a 5-minute gap. Tell everyone what the hell it is in that box up there on the wall that's blinking. That means that the internet stays up. And I'm like, hi, I'm Nick, and I'm the one that made the internet work, and there's this thing. I was just really, really timid, but I was given encouragement. Someone helped me, encouraged me, talked me through it, got me up there. And then, 10 years later, you can't get me off the stage. But it took that effort, it took that encouragement from someone that knew me to get me up there. Getting other people into our communities, again, it may need some mentoring. They may need some help, they may need some encouragement to let them know that they're good at something that they don't know they're good at. Another one, design. Most of the last few conferences, I've ended up doing slide templates for the community. I think my slides are rubbish. They're not too bad, I don't think, but I think I could probably do better. But then if you look at some of the other people in the community, they all love my slides because it's better than what they would have done. And maybe I've just got this too high a bar for what's good enough to take part, because I used to work at a web agency and we had people who were really, really good at it. The first time Rich put out the call, and he was like, we need some slides, come on, someone. I'm like, no, I can't do that, I can't do anything that's going to be any good. And in the end, I think I just did some for myself, and everyone was like, oh my God, where do I get those slides from? I want to steal the template. And I'm like, no, you can't steal the template, it's rubbish. And it takes time for people to realize that even if you can't do the best, all that you can manage may be enough for the community. And that they don't necessarily have to be the world's best Java coder to take part in the project. They don't have to be the world's best speaker to stand up and help out. Another problem that people face when getting involved in other stuff is you were almost there, but you didn't know. Okay, so let's see this slide here. We've got this photo that I took on Saturday, because I knew I needed another light slide deck, because I was taking a previous slide deck from Vancouver where I'd had a light image, and I was being lazy, and I was just going to swap the image. And I was like, oh, it's too blue. There's too much light in it. I need to make it a little bit more faded so that it'll work as a background. And I'm there in the GIMP. I'm Googling tutorials. I'm trying things. I'm adding layers. It's not changing. I'm like, oh, God, what am I doing? Why on earth did I agree to do these slides? I can't do design. And I asked my girlfriend for help. And she's like, you're there. You see, you've added the layer, you've added the second layer, you put that layer on top, you've set the color to light blue. Transparency, just type in there, type 10 in there. I just put a 1 and it was the right color. I'm like, I've spent an hour fighting with this stuff. She's like, no, but you've done it. You had to add a layer, you've added a layer, you had to put that layer in top, you had to set the color. I'm like, but no, I thought it was useless. Yeah. And I was just that one last step away from having it perfect. But I didn't have the confidence. I'd lost the confidence. If you've got people coming into your community, if you're mentoring them, they could be 99% of the way there and they just need that extra little push to help them. They may have set themselves really high bars for participation that's too high. Just give them a hand, help them out. And that can make the difference between getting them involved and not. Another example, who here remembers maths problems at school? And you had this really long problem, and you're working your way through, and you get stuck. And you ask one of your friends or your teacher, and they're like, no, you're there. So you just put this other line and you're there, and you're looking at this again, but how did you make that leap? Sometimes people can be almost there and they just need a little bit of help and encouragement to get them that last bit. Learning a new computer game. Sometimes you need to turn the tutorial on just to, or Google that little level thing, and you're like, okay, so I'm driving through the city and then I get to there and oh, I'm stuck, and then you Google and you're like, oh, so if I press space bar, then, yeah, okay, right, I'm good. Maybe that's just me, but you know, sometimes you're just almost there and you need that little bit of help to finish. This is really important. Positive first feedback. Any of you guys do Instagram? So I don't think I take that great photos. I mean, I quite like taking photos and I used to put them up on Facebook and things. And someone's like, oh, you should put them on Instagram. I'm like, oh, no, they're all really good. I've been on Instagram. There are all these cool people taking these amazing shots. And I got the app and then I posted one. And it just like pops up, like. So-and-so likes your photo, so-and-so likes your photo. I'm like, actually, okay. I haven't just got a million likes like Kim Kardashian, but you know, I have actually got 20 likes. There's 20 random people I've never met before who actually quite like that photo I took. And it encourages you to carry on. Take more photos, get more engaged. If the response to your first post to the mailing list is someone saying, oh, that's a really interesting point. Yeah, we haven't thought of that. If the response to your first patch is, hey, thanks. Even if it's, hey, thanks, we're in the middle of a release right now, so we're going to ignore all patches for the next 3 days while the release goes through, and then we'll be back. But just give them that encouragement. Say, this is your first patch. This is your first bug report. This is your first contribution to the mailing list. Thank you for that. That welcoming, that encouragement keeps them around. Rather than like, oh, those Apache people, I gave them a patch, and I just didn't hear anything. What's the point? Why am I even bothering? So just try and welcome and encourage those new people, especially people coming in that we need more of, to encourage them to stick around, because they're going to go through some shitty stuff as well. You know, if they're in their second language and then there's a flame war going on and someone having an argument about something, we're going to need to give them quite a lot of encouragement so they'll stick around to get past that. And if their first experience is bad, then we just lost them. Some of the Stack Exchange sites can be really friendly. I take part in the Travel Stack Exchange site. People asking Q&A about traveling. And they're really nice. Yeah, that was the first one I kind of got involved in. And it'd be like, hey, I'm coming to Seville, and I need to get from the airport to the hotel, and I don't necessarily want to pay for the taxi, but the website's all in Spanish, and I can't work out how to do it. And then someone would be like, okay, so what you want to do is you want to get this bus here, you know, welcome, have a great time in Spain. You're like, yeah, okay, this is good. Oh, and I can help out because there's someone coming to Oxford who's French, and I can tell them about that. Hey, it's really fun, it's really nice. Gets you involved, gives you the positive feedback, you stick around. You get the little badge that shows up, well done, excellent question, excellent answer, rep goes up, little green, yay. Who's been on Stack Overflow for the first time? And you're like, oh look, there's a guy asking a question. Oh yeah, we fixed that last week. I'll just put a link in to the bug and say, we fixed it in 2.2, here's the bug. And you post it, you're like, yeah, I've helped him. And then it's like, please do not include link-only answers, link-only answers. If you have any questions, you should not put that in a... that needs to be a comment, not an answer. Don't, because you posted saying, oh, this might fix it for you. Did you try this bug? They're like, no, that's a comment. Delete, downvote, delete, delete. And you're like, what? That's just trying to help. Yeah, I know the answer. They got a problem. I know the answer. You know, the first time you ask a question and you're like, hey, there's this problem we're having and we wanted to use a linked hash map, but it's not quite giving the right performance. What do we do? And someone was like, this is not a place for opinions. Opinionated questions degenerate into spam, link-only answers, downvote, downvote, downvote. You're now banned from the site for asking low-quality questions. And you're like, holy shit, what am I going to do? Stack Overflow can be a really intimidating place first. The only reason I got the rep I've got on Stack Overflow was because I was trained on travel, and then I came across the Stack Overflow and kind of knew how it worked and could push through. And sometimes also just go on the travel chat and say, can anyone upvote my question before I get banned? Which you're not supposed to do, but you know, it does kind of work. But it can be a really intimidating first environment. And for many projects out there, if you can't ask on Stack Overflow, you're not going to get help. There's a lot of reasonably popular open source projects now that don't have a users mailing list. Maybe there's an IRC channel where they're all awake at a different time of the day to you. Maybe they speak a different language to you. Other than that, you can try and ask on Stack Overflow and hope that you didn't offend the gods of opinionated because you put one extra word in. That means that everyone's script then thinks that that's an opinion question and downvotes you to oblivion. It can be really hard. I mean, you'll see people at Apache sometimes say about, we need to get rid of mailing lists. Everyone uses Stack Overflow, there's so many answers and so on. But be aware, it can be quite daunting. It can be nice to have a little friendly group of people who can ask some questions, answer them, give feedback, guide people to it without them getting banned for asking bad questions. If your user's mailing list is as bad as Stack Overflow for welcomingness or lack thereof, those people are gone for good, because you know they couldn't ask on Stack Overflow, they can't answer any mailing list, you've lost them. You've lost that contributor, just because they turned up at the wrong time, didn't quite answer their question right, it was in their third language, and someone was a bit short with them, they're gone. We've lost the person that was going to solve the next critical bug, that was going to become the next PMC chair. We lost them just by not welcoming them. So if we can, be like Instagram, where your first thing, even if it's not perfect, does at least get you some enthusiasm, some welcome. Don't be like Stack Overflow or some of the wiki bits on Wikipedia where the first thing you get is someone telling you it's wrong and then someone else deleting it. Because you're going to lose people. And especially you're going to lose people who are already playing it on hard and don't have any more energy left. Okay, we're almost out of time. I want to go and get a plane home. Probably you guys want to go and have a beer or a flight home or something. A few other resources that's worth having a look up. This is quite a good one, talking about why women quit tech firms, why it is that the percentage of women coming out of university is not the same percentage as the number of women left 5 years later. Some of the reasons that we're losing the people playing on a higher difficulty level. This is quite a good one. A guy from Cracked talking about some of the problems that we've got as a society and why some quick, glib answers won't necessarily solve them and why there's actually some deep issues behind them that we're going to have to try and tackle and solve. One about why we shouldn't fear a feminist future. And then there's loads and loads of resources on feminism. So if this has inspired you to learn a bit more about the lives of people who aren't playing on easy, that's some good starting points. Other than where's the bar, any questions?
Very beginning.
scripture. We're recording it, so...
Yeah, sure. So what I want to say, you're absolutely right on every single slide. And I can say that because English is my second language. And it was very, from the very beginning, it was very difficult to get into the community, whereas the community was my company, right? So we had time zone differences, we had language issues, it was difficult for me to get into conversations, getting people right, doing jokes, everything. So great talk, and I hope I don't know why there are so less people here, but maybe you should do this on the next ApacheCon on the very beginning or so, or as keynote maybe.
Thanks. Okay, thanks.
I have one question.
Yep, go for it.
So when you speak about diversity, when we work with other countries like European, English, Americans, so they, when a person has to come to Europe and he wants to work, there are some language barriers. Since we code in English, so if we have some... we don't get that language barrier and get into the developer community and build. So what do you think about...
It's a few years ago, and I might remember it wrong, but someone's saying, I like watching Japanese manga. That doesn't mean I can walk into a Japanese restaurant and order anything I want from the menu and pronounce it right. Just because... I'm around it doesn't mean I automatically know it. Just because you're typing text that contains English words into your text editor doesn't automatically mean that you have a perfect command of English. We need to remember that, well, the language of our code is English. That doesn't necessarily mean that everyone who is typing it is going to know, and that we need to try and help people rather than going, well, you can code, so of course you speak English.
No, I mean to say in terms of communication, because some people may not entertain you because you don't know that language to communicate with us. So you can't get into our organization, and because I don't know English. So it happened to me sometime where in Slovak there was an opportunity, and the other person didn't know the English. So
yeah.
It'll be miscommunication, so I can't communicate to work together.
Yeah, we just, until we get AI working and stuff, be fine. I mean, one of the reasons I think that HTTPD lasted in its top spot for as long as it did was because you had to know Russian to install Nginx for a long time. Because you couldn't, all the original docs were in Russian, and you get your Russian friends who are like, oh, I've installed this new server, oh, it's so much easier to get going, so much faster. And they'd send you a link to the tarball, and you'd be like, what? And then it only kind of really started taking off when they got a bigger community behind it and some companies behind it that started translating the docs and helping interface between the developers. And there was this great, great bit of code there that we couldn't use because we didn't know it. I mean, there's so much open source out there, so much being written in India and in China that as a community we ought to be learning from, that we ought to be using, that we can't because it's written in Mandarin, it's written in Hindi, it's written in Kannada, and that's not... I don't know how we're going to solve it, but at the very least we need to be aware. If we can be aware of the issue, then we've got more hope of solving it than pretending that everyone who does computers speaks English.
It may be more sort of like just be aware of the issue of the language. I think if you take your example of Stack Overflow and the sort of like aggression or sort of like community mores or standards or whatever you want to call it to clean those things, also maybe sort of like the goal of that community. So in the case of, say, those Apache community used in the example, the communication is mostly to convey information And there isn't sort of like, basically, there isn't much of a need to sort of like also, or it isn't essential to sort of like also like capture the right amount of lightness or gravity or whatever else, right? So that works for that community. Whereas sort of like in the case of Stack Overflow, it's a very different thing. You're trying to accomplish a different goal, which actually has a lot to do with communication, with authoritative voice, and all sorts of these other things. So I'm not entirely convinced that sort of like it's just fixing the language barrier. I also think it's about these communities being very aware what it is they're trying to do. Because is Wikipedia or Stack Overflow, is that a community which is trying to make the best compendium of a certain body of information? Or is it just like sort of like, you can ask the same question for your local so like football or soccer club, is it the place where basically you go to become the best soccer player possible, or are you sort of like having a sort of like a very enjoyable time with your friends and you happen to be playing soccer that day? But I mean, it could have been a cricket club just as easily, right? And that's sort of like something similar happening, I think, in these different communities, which I think interferes with that whole language problem.
Yeah, and with the people on Stack Overflow answering the HTTPD questions,
right.
They're trying to get the best answer to that HTTPD question. Whereas what we want is the person asking the question to become a committer in 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. So you're basically trying to build a community rather than a body of knowledge.
Yeah.
You see the same thing happening in the IETF, where when standards groups are very much about very technical standards, language barriers seem to almost like melt away. The moment they go into areas of policy and habit and best standards, culture sort of like kicks in big time.
Right, thank you for staying to the bitter end. See you all in Miami.
Thank you all.